thank you to the Faders. I don't see them, but I know that they're here. Thank you very much for hosting us. I was thinking even before I got here how amazing it is, considering everything you have going on in your life with the wedding that you're hosting it. And then I am amazed but unsurprised when Toby said, I'm going to have to leave because I have to go to a shul meeting. So this is an unbelievable thing to host a shir in your house the same night that you're also going to a shul meeting. Is certainly quite appreciated, and we thank you both very much for opening your home to us. It certainly is very least you get a source sheet. Okay. On the one hand, it's true, as I mentioned, I had Tommy mentioned in shul this morning, that this is an independent topic. It's not connected per se or directly to last week's topic. On the other hand, as we left off at the end of last week, we really were building last week to where we want to discuss tonight. Namely, that last week we spoke about the general process of conversion, and we spoke about some other things, including the fact that it relates to both a private personal yearning to get close to God. At the same time, we mentioned that part of what's unique about Judaism, which is reflected through the Gerus process, is that it's not just a private and personal relationship that the convert's now developing with God in a new way than they previously had, but also, to use the metaphor of somebody from last week, when they're reaching out their hand, it's not just for Hashem to reach back, but also the Jewish people. It's becoming part of the Jewish people. And that dynamic is what has led, again, without getting into it, as we mentioned even briefly last week, a lot of the public controversy that surrounds Gerus. In a certain sense, one would have imagined, well, what is the public? What does the community have anything to do with this? This is my private relationship with God. I was one religion. I want to change it. And on some level, that's absolutely true. But the reason that, in fact, ultimately it's not true is part of what's so unique about Judaism, again, is that when the convert comes close, it's not just coming close to Hashem and Judaism in some abstract sense, but also becoming a member of the Jewish people. And the process of conversion really reflects, again, not to reiterate last week's lecture, reflects this duality of the private and the subjective, on the one hand, but existing at the same time with the more public and the more formal, reflecting the tzibur of the community. We then moved last week into the central focus of our shir, which was the idea that, again, despite some of the interesting dynamic in the sources, but the upshot seemed to be, with very little exception, a very strong statement requiring that part of the Gerus process is a notion of the convert not only being sincere in some abstract sense, but specifically accepting upon him or herself the yoke of mitzvahs, the life of Torah observance. And of course, as one person put out, a straw man, of course that doesn't mean there's an expectation that the ger is going to be a perfect, mitzvah robot. It's impossible and unrealistic. But what it means is that there hopefully will be a sincere commitment and desire. Whether that is part of the process to accept it, which seemed to be the position of Tosfos and others, or as the Rambam seemed to have implied in Rav Soloveitchik, described in very powerful terms from his father, that it's not so much part of the process, because that would almost, from Rav Soloveitchik's perspective, diminish it. It's the essence of what Gerus is. What does that mean to become a Jew? It's a joke, he says, if you would divorce that somehow from accepting mitzvahs. That is everything. And therefore, it's not a part of the process. That would be almost to minimize it. It is the essence of everything. And therefore, to speak about a Gerus without it would be very, very, do violence almost to not only the Gerus concept, but to the concept of Judaism, as we understand it, being so focused on our relationship with Hashem through mitzvos. That was, as someone said to me last week, nice in theory. The reality of Gerus and where this interplays in ways which can be very interesting when you're studying it, very sensitive and even controversial and difficult if you're in the moment as a rabbi or a participant, comes most often in two forms. And I want to discuss one tonight, and Emir Tashem conclude the series next week discussing that other very sensitive and complicated forum. The one I want to discuss next week will be the issue of when you convert young children. And again, if you're dealing with a wonderful, nice, frum family, we're hopefully going to raise a nice, wonderful, young, frum adopted child, so that's not so complicated. I mean, life and raising a child could be complicated, but that's not our topic. However, the issue which will come up is, and certainly can come up, is what happens when you have a non-observant family adopting a child, and then they want to convert the child. And the question is, again, if they're not going to be raising the child to be observant, can we adopt that child? Can we convert that child? Very, very difficult question. Again, as I mentioned last week, these types of cases I don't have too often, if at all, coming across my desk. It's not the nature of our shul, but rabbis in either other parts of Baltimore or certainly in other smaller communities, this is something that can happen with some regularity. And this is some of the most emotional and difficult shilas that they could have, which is obviously very, very complicated, quote-unquote, in the real world. Another very interesting and sometimes fascinating, really, version of this is a little bit earlier in the life cycle, and that is marriage. I mentioned last week, I think if one would do a study, and I don't think you need to, but if one did, the number of people who convert for the sake of a spouse to be married to a Jewish spouse in America, for sure, and I assume it's true to the extent that people are still converting in Europe, is probably greater than the number of converts from all other reasons and motivations combined. Whether those be other sincere or insincere reasons, but the number of people converting for other reasons is dwarfed by the conversions that are being produced, that are motivated because of a marriage situation. And therefore, this becomes very much, as we would say, Omed al haperek. This is not only contemporary, but it's also was classic. In any generation, this is a timely question, and how to deal with it, though, may change from generation to generation in some level, we'll see. And just to see in light of just the last segue from last week, before we really see the new sources, is just, again, just to keep a frame of reference, if we established last week that there's a need for Kabbalah Samitzvos, for the convert to want to be observant, to accept the mitzvos upon themselves, if we have somebody who's only converting so that they can marry a Jewish man or Jewish woman, in more times than not, that is part of that, you know, dating. When the Jew and the non-Jew were dating, they probably weren't talking too much about mitzvah observance. You know, well, yeah, I only going to have Chol Yisrael in my house. Is that okay with you? And you know, how do you feel about, you know, going out on Sunday? They weren't talking about the details of Shmiras HaMitzvos, right? The fact that now, again, and we don't need much of an imagination, the fact that now, whether on their own motivation or from one of the parents, all of a sudden now they say we want to convert for marriage is usually indicative of the fact that there's not going to be, or at least doesn't seem to be, prima facie, a sincere commitment otherwise to convert. It could be, in some cases there would be, and even those are easier but also complicated, but certainly, on the face of it, if you have someone who's motivated for marriage, they're not motivated by all the nice esoteric things we spoke about last week. Getting close to God, recognizing the truth of Judaism, etc. They may recognize the true love of the spouse, the intended spouse. That's obviously very different. So the question is, in light of everything we saw last week, what do you do in all of these, literally hundreds and thousands of cases every year? How are these handled? Can they be handled? So as I mentioned, this is not a new topic. In fact, it was first addressed with similar questions in the Gemara. If you'll take a look at the first source, the Gemara tells us, this is from the Mishnah on the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos on Daf Chof Dalet, and we see here a machlokes. Leave aside the Mishnah. The Mishnah discusses it a little bit, but the Gemara really has a debate about it. If you take a look at the second line, the Gemara discusses the following case. Echad ish shenisgayer l'shem isha. You have a man who's converting just because he wants to marry a Jewish woman. Echad isha shenisgayer l'shem ish. Or a woman who's converting just because she wants to marry a Jewish man. Or other examples of insincere motivation. She is wants the person wants to be part of a royal family, thinks that the Jewish people are very coveted. L'shomah wants to be part of, in this case, just to give an example, part of the Shlomo HaMelech's palace. Einam Gerim, says Rabbi Nechemiah. Furthermore, Rabbi Nechemiah elaborates, there was an example, this is from the time of Tanakh, Geri Arayos, there was a situation described in Tanakh where there were the lions and the people felt that if they will convert, they'll be saved and they'll be protected. So again, it's we feel bad for them, but they were certainly not, again, being motivated by the way Yisrael was motivated, let's put it that way. Or Geri Milchamos, if we have a big army. Or, for example, this is a very bitter, anticlimactic point for some people, but here the Gemara makes it clear that when the Megillah ends, the end of the Megillah, when it says Rabim Yahadim, that many people converted at the time because they were so scared of the mighty Jewish army that was savaging Haman's armies. The Gemara here says very clearly, according to Rabbi Nechemiah, they're not kosher converts because they weren't converting because of a love of Judaism and Torah. They were converting because they were scared that if they don't convert, maybe Mordechai and his people will kill them. And all of those says the Rabbi Nechemiah, Einam Gerim. until they, again, in the time of the Gemara is describing a situation where they're in Golos, right? The Jewish people weren't all powerful and mighty, that people would want to convert just to join the powerful, mighty Jews. And therefore, if they were converting like in that day, obviously they're sincere, that's the only reason to convert. It says Rabbi Nechemiah, only then is it a good conversion. However, the Gemara quotes a second opinion and says the following. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Martha Mishmei to Rav. This was not the only opinion on the matter. Furthermore, Halacha kedivrei HaOmer kulam geirimein. There's another opinion out there that says in all of these cases, even though there's clearly some other motivation, at the end of the day, these are considered kosher conversions, or at least acceptable conversions. And this is, in fact, as the Gemara says very clearly, the way we paskin the Halacha. Now, the truth of the matter is, if you take a look at the Rambam, there's parts of the Rambam that are really not clear and have led to a lot of kind of academic discussion, which I don't want to focus on. But just let's look at the beginning of the Rambam, which is important to see because it's basically lifted completely by the Shulchan Aruch. Even though there are all sorts of opinions out there, the Shulchan Aruch just quotes word for word the Rambam. So we need to see, what is the Rambam? How does he bring down the essence, the upshot of this Gemara? The Rambam tells us, this is part, we saw this source briefly at the end of last week's shiur. Ha mitzvah ha nechona, what is the proper way for things to be handled? Kishiyavo hager or hagiyores lehiskayer, when a man or a woman comes to present themselves and announces themselves that they have intention of converting, bod kin acharav, we have to search to see what their motivation is. Shema biglal mamon shito, maybe, you know, someone left in a will, you know, if you convert to Judaism, maybe they think that, you know, all Jews are rich and therefore if they'll convert, they'll have success in business. Oh, vishvil svara, they think they're going to get power. If they are pachar or they're scared, all sorts of other motivations. Or, furthermore, maybe the one that's relevant to us tonight, ish who bod ken acharav shema einav nasan beisha yehudis. Maybe he fell in love with a nice Jewish girl. Bim isha he bod ken shema einav nasna b'bachor mi'bachorei Yisrael. A nice Jewish boy. Just as a quick aside, I had a friend, somebody who I grew up with, more or less in Cincinnati. He went to the University of Miami in Florida, and I still remember him telling me that the non-Jewish girls on the university campus, all they wanted was to date Jewish boys. Consciously and consistently. They were desperate to marry Jewish boys. It was a fascinating. So the nisayon, for someone who's not fully committed, is not simple. It wasn't just that statistically the overwhelming number of people that you might happen to want to go out with would happen to be non-Jewish. It was worse than that. They were actively looking for the Jewish boys. Huh? No, Miami and Florida. But I guarantee it was the same thing in Miami of Ohio. It's a phenomenon. So the truth is, which is why most of the Shilas, we have the bottom line Shilas, the real cases, most of them are with a non-Jewish woman and a Jewish man. Not all, but most of them. Most of them. Interesting, just as a phenomenon. Well, it's difficult in the sense of the children, right? That is true. So the Rambam continues and says, in such a case, we look to see what's going on. If we see that there's nothing else, if it turns out that none of that's true, they have no other reason to convert but sincerity, so then we start educating them. We teach them, we send them to, you know, a Geirus Institute, Modiyin Osan, Kovod Otara, then we go into the details of the mitzvos. And then if you skip down to the next line where I have it underlined, he sums up, because anyone who's converting for some other reason, Eino me geirei tzedek. It's not really a righteous convert. That's not supposed to be what you do. Nevertheless, says the Rambam, at the end of the day, if you converted them, look at, he says at the bottom, afilu chazer v'avad akum, even if it turns out after the conversion, they're even worshipping Avodah Zarah. That's just that they're not religious Jews. They become religious non-Jews, so to speak. Hari hu ki Yisrael mumar shekidusha kedushin. Which is another way of saying that the conversion apparently was good. Now again, that was the opinion that we saw in the Gemara. But what is important from the Rambam, the reason that the Rambam, which was not in our Gemara the case, was from a different Gemara, we saw, the Rambam introduces this discussion, he doesn't just cite the Gemara. He first talks about this investigation. And the Rambam makes it clear, and if they're sincere, we should convert them. What's the clear implication of the Rambam? If they're not sincere, we're not supposed to convert them. And that is Nothing I'll say the rest of the shiur is going to change that.
But if they did, they're Jewish.
Yes.
And you can't say 10 years later you're not Jewish.
Well, in most cases, yes. Let's make the point. Let me make this point clearly. Again, nothing we'll say, and we're going to get into all sorts of interesting things, which will be, in a certain sense, much more flexible. The point is, however, that one thing for sure we need to know. If there's other motivations, again, unless there's overriding counter concerns, which we'll see, but in terms of the theoretical halacha, for sure it's clear. When someone has an insincere motivation, it doesn't make them a bad person, but it does make them a bad candidate for conversion. And as this is really, frankly, more for me than for you, the Rabbanim, and you see this in some of the tshuvas, the real ire is not against the people are just nice people, but the ire is against the Rabbanim. Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he mentions, that rabbis who do this are hedyotos, which is a nice way of saying fools or unlearned. And he writes how some of these rabbis, they don't mind being hedyotos. They're fools, they know they're fools. Because the people are doing, rabbanim are doing things, doing conversions that they shouldn't be doing. And that is certainly, without a doubt, true. The question will be, as Rav Oberstein alluded to, at the end of the day though, but if there was a conversion, the Gemara and the Rambam seem to say that the conversion is good.
Is it possible to interpret the Gemara in a more limited sense, that what Rav is coming along and saying is, historically, those individuals were considered to be gayrim, and not generalize that to ulterior motivations?
Maybe, but that's not how any of the... but that's not the Rishonim or the Shulchan Aruch. They pask in the basis of this Gemara. It wasn't a one-time thing. They're telling us a halacha. We'll get to that. The simple understanding is that there isn't. What's the motivation? Is the motivation for one or the other? But that doesn't mean that... Right. Correct. Good. I want to mention, even though we don't have to read all of it now, I'll mention a few... We'll see it a few different times in the source sheets. I included an article. I did notice, Jim, that it was from 1965. And it's not that there's been nothing. Yeah, it's not that there's been nothing written on conversion since 1965, but this is a very important article, and it's quoted by others. Plus, Rav Melech Schechter, who just passed away less than a year ago, is Rav Herschel Schechter's father, and I actually had him as a Rebbe for one half a year, and it's always nice to be able to, especially someone who recently passed away, to be able to keep his Torah alive. So Rabbi Schechter, who was involved in conversion, needless to say, over 40 years ago, he had discussed some of these issues then. And he makes the point, really just drawing out what we've seen until now, which is that insincere converts are not supposed to be converted. And he makes the point, again, people are arguing, and this is an argument that apparently didn't just exist in 1965, although it did. I've heard it even more recently, certainly by other denominations, how we should actively be converting because we need to rise our numbers. We'll make the Jewish people stronger if we have more numbers. We should make extra converts. And I thought it was very poignant and very well said, as Rabbi Schechter says at the end of this piece in the right column, it is not in numbers that Judaism finds its strength, not quantity, but rather quality. A genuine commitment to Torah is the element of paramount importance. And that is generally our, in that sense, I would call it ambivalent attitude. We're not looking for it. As we saw last week, sincere converts come to us, we accept them hopefully with open arms. But we're not looking for it, and we're certainly not looking for watered-down, insincere converts. The question is as follows. If that's the case, and we saw last week that Kabbalah Samitzvos, accepting Mitzvos, is critical, this is really what Tali was anticipating a minute ago, so why is it, Taka, why is it at the end of the day that the Gemara says, that the Rambam says, the Shulchan Aruch says, that the conversion is good? If there was no Kabbalah Samitzvos, if they're only interested in the love of their life, getting married, and you know what happened, the Jewish parents said, well, you can only get married if you convert. We'll bring you to the rabbi and convert, right? None of you have ever heard that one before, right? So why is that conversion good? Good, the rabbi shouldn't have done it. But the rabbi felt pressure. It was the president's daughter and this boy. And you know, some rabbis buckle under pressure. No, and you know, but some rabbis do buckle under pressure. So why is it good? You should say it's not good. This is not a new question. The Ritva asked this question, in essence. Right? The Ritva was one of the prime students from the Beis Medrash of the Ramban, from Spain in the Middle Ages. And the Ritva has a fascinating explanation. The Ritva says it's true that this convert in question does not come to Judaism for sincere reasons, to come for romantic reasons. But imagine what was life like when they actually got through that with their motivation. But as Talia says, but once they actually were converted and they wanted to marry this nice Jewish girl or Jewish boy, circumstances, either because perhaps they fell in love with a religious Jewish boy or girl, or even if it wasn't the actual couple, to a certain extent, but to live in the Jewish community of the time of the Gemara, or even the time of the Ritva, to live in the Jewish community, you couldn't. You had no choice. You had no choice. You had no choice but to become observant.
Can there be an exclusive method of conversion?
So that's exactly what he describes. Take a look. Just read the one line at the bottom where I have it underlined. Kevan d'nisgairu, since they did convert, v'kiblu aleihem, and they said, you know, they're going to accept it, chazakahu, we can presume, the agav onsaihu, what's the pressure? The pressure is communal pressure. Gamru v'kiblu, in the end of the day, even though in their mind they might not have been thinking of it, they were only thinking of, I want to marry this girl, I love her, but circumstances force them ultimately to make peace with, if I really love this girl, a lot of things I'm going to have to give up. Free time. Going to the game, you know, who knows what she'll ask of me. But the first thing I'm going to have to ask is, she's asking me is, I got to live the life of a Jew. The machmas ha'onis ha'vegeris hu ha'libah d'rabbanan. The opinion that we paskin like says, the pressure, again, certainly less than ideal. You're not supposed to convert somebody like this. But at the end of the day, if the conversion went through, the communal pressure, the circumstances, what have you, create that situation. Oh!
Back then,
so let's turn the page. Very good.
Today we're in a new ballgame.
I never took you as a machmir. I don't know why anybody's laughing. Maybe they know something I don't know. However, you're exactly right, I'm afraid to say. And it's a very important point because, you know, just as I can digress for just a brief moment, you know, very often Rabbanim hear a certain comment, which is in essence a criticism of, you know, they want rabbis should be more in the world and be more in tune to current events. Now, leave aside any other factors of such statements or criticisms, but what is the underlying assumption that if the rabbis would be, we would be what? More lenient, of course, Rabbi, you ask so much of me, and you're so strict, because you're living in that world, you're in the ivory tower. But get out of the Beis Medrash, get out of the, you know, the office, get off the pulpit, see the problems of the real world, and then you'll be more flexible and understand. That's the assumption, obviously. So I tell people that you have to be careful what you wish for. Because very often, if you're living in a more idyllic world, you may say, oh, sure, what's the problem with X or Y? Oh, I come out of the Beis Medrash and I see what's going on with X and Y. Oh, stay away. That's usury. You can't do that. And that's in fact the case. Just because, you know, very often the people, there are chumers out there. But not because the rabbis aren't in the world. On the contrary, because they are in the world and they see what's going on. An example of that, of historic importance, is our case. And exactly as you anticipated. If the explanation of the Gemara is as we described it, so that's only true when circumstances are such, when you have a community in which observance is the sine qua non. If it's absolutely, it's unacceptable to live in the community and be unobservant. It's not that there were never irreligious Jews, of course there were. But they had to leave the community, they couldn't live in the community. But if the situation changes, so we don't have that onus, that pressure, to create the final, to get the convert across the finish line. They're not getting there by themselves, presumably, because they're not sincere. They don't care. This insight was noticed in a number of different circumstances. I gave you two. I'm only going to read one inside. The first one I have is from the Sefer Dvar Avram. I quote it to you because the Dvar Avram was a very important person in his own right. He was the chief rabbi of Kovna. And he had two relationships which are relevant for us. Number one is, he is the grandfather by name of the recent chief rabbi of Israel, who just passed away, whose name was Rav Avram Shapiro, named after his grandfather, the Dvar Avram, Rav Avram Shapiro. Number two, he also, even though he wasn't a Rebbe in a formal sense, but when time came for Rav Soloveitchik to become Rav Soloveitchik, to get smicha, his smicha is from the Dvar Avram. So whenever I have a chance to quote him, I look for it. But I'm not going to read it to you inside, because what he says, and he was living, it's interesting, not in some modern American community. He was living, you know, pre-war in Europe. But winds of change had already hit. Come. Furthermore, it was echoed by the Chuvas Heichal Yitzchak. Who knows who the Heichal Yitzchak was? I'll give you a hint. It's written from Eretz Yisrael. Close. The chief rabbi of Israel, Yitzchak Isaac Herzog. And again, it's important to note, especially as you read, I'll read you some of the lines here, Herzog was very worldly. I'm still on page 2, middle of the page. Very worldly. I mean, he's a big Talmud Chacham, but college educated, very worldly. Part of the chief rabbinate. Huh? Yes, exactly. It's your chief rabbi there. Then he came, exactly. The Herzogs and the politics, that's his family. The president, Chaim Herzog, the son. Very establishment Israeli family. Great, great gadol of Herzog. So he says the following, after quoting this idea. First line. Yesh tichashash v'tzini bizman hazeh. I'm very unclear. I have a very big worry. Lithnim b'Yisrael used to be haya ha'avarya nivzev nirdaf be'amo. A person who was going to flout religious norms, intermarry, not keep Shabbos, they were scorned. They were looked down on. There was communal pressure. Therefore, kishakibel alav goya yados, when the non-Jew converts, avo vishasibari shona shehigi yaso laka chaisa ishas, even though their first motivation was certainly romantic and not spiritual, hariyada shehe matzavo rama'od b'chever hayahadus. He knew that it would be a very difficult situation for him if with the Jewish community, furthermore, parentheses, me'achevra ha'goyit yehet tolush v'nekra. First of all, he's going to be totally cut off from the Jewish world. He's going to have to be totally isolated in a Jewish shtetl. Im la'yis na'ay ketorah. It'll be horrible for him. He has to leave his family, abandon his family and friends. And if he's not going to be religious with the Jewish people, they're not going to like him either. So that pressure closed the deal. Masha'enkin b'yameinu, in our days, shekol ha'harbe chavshim. There's so many irreligious, secular Jews. Lo rach she'ena miskashim b'glaza. Not only is it just that they don't have a difficult life being irreligious. Ela sha'om dimo'ed b'rosh ha'uma v'hakilos. They're the leaders of our people. They're b'kavadik. Al kein yesh lochosh. Therefore, there's what to be worried. She'enenu be'emes makabal of l'shmur ha'mitzvah. So somebody who converts nowadays, why should we ever assume that they're going to ever become sincere? Elish amishum hasiba, whatever the original motivation is. Who omer befiv, he'll make something in his mouth. He'll say, yeah, I want to keep mitzvos. Aval libo balimo, but his heart's going to be in another place. And the ritva, going back to our ritva, says, she'agav onse gamar makni, it's only the pressure that closes the deal. Uba yameinu, in our days, says Rav Herzog, yesh lomer she'agav onso hu omer mashu hu omer. It's just the opposite. It's the pressure from the father-in-law, whoever, that makes him parrot the line, yes, Rabbi, I want to convert. Yes, I want to keep the mitzvos. Aval lama lo ligmor b'daito lishmor b'emes. But there's no reason whatsoever for him to ever be sincere. Now you'll tell me, theoretically, Levitzur, but he is sincere. Okay, so then.
Why is it sincere that he goes to the rabbi and the conservative congregation and you think the guy says to him, hey, you want to keep the mitzvahs?
Well, then that's a bigger problem because he doesn't even talk. We're talking about if he would go in Israel, it's certainly the case, where they go to someone who in theory is telling them what they have to do. It's just that they're not sincere when they say that they're going to do it.
90% of them don't do that.
Yes, that's even a bigger problem. I'm saying even theoretically you get an Orthodox conversion, says a Herzog, which is obviously the Gemara is talking about. Nevertheless, he says in our days, not so clear we could even rely on that. So yes, we're open, the winds of change, and the rabbis are out in the world, and they see what's going on. But that doesn't always lead to leniencies. In this case, it could lead to a very big chumrah. Yes?
A lot of times people assume that because of the last 500 years, that the Jewish community is so strict, blah, 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 the goyim have to separate. But you go back to Ezra, and you go back to the Roman Empire, the Ottoman Empire, and a lot of the people there were heterodox, and I don't know if you should always assume socially that there was all this pressure from community and people, because we know like so many people that are married.
You're right in the time of Ezra, for example. You are right in the time.
True in a lot of
things. The point is simple that it's not that people weren't irreligious. I alluded to that before, or never intermarried, although it certainly was less. It's that you could, if you did that, it meant leaving the organized Jewish community. I think that's correct.
No,
Ezra was a completely unique, sui generis situation. In Ezra's time,
I mean, that's the reason the Tanakh speaks about it. The reason the Tanakh speaks about Ezra was because it was rampant there. I'm not saying there was no other times. Of course, we know the Jewish people. There would have been no Churban on the Beis HaMikdash. The Jewish people were all observant. I'm not saying that the Jewish were all...
Well, how much in halacha does social environment and all these social questions play on halacha?
You're asking a question which is well beyond tonight's topic. But again, I don't think I'm the first one to make this assumption or the sources on this surgery. We know without a doubt, certainly when it comes to something like intermarriage, the numbers, especially in the time of the Gemara, the place, were far significantly lower. And they erupted, as we'll see some of the posts can speak about, when the world changed, when all of a sudden Jews became invited to become citizens of the world, which had many blessings, but... Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, people sat Shiva, right? This is a reason, even... Yeah.
Right.
Why would the rabbi see that the person is not really serious about it? Why you don't ask him, did you try reform? And send him to them.
Okay.
So, and that would be the solve to all of the questions. Your father wasn't married by his rabbi.
Right. Let's move on because I want to focus on, we have a few pages left at source sheet, and I want to focus on the fact that until now we have focused not only on the theoretical halacha, but the fact is, again, especially in light of this insight, reasons really, especially nowadays, you would imagine relays to really be strict, because as we said, the initial motivation is insincere. There's no reason to assume that's going to change anytime soon, and it's really, really a problem. However, there's a big but and a big however. There is a decent amount of literature which has been willing to debate back and forth, and I hope to try to give you a little bit of both sides, but certainly a significant amount of the lenient side, about whether we can take other circumstances into account. For example, let's say, again, typical case, you know that if you don't convert them, what are they going to say? Okay, you go back to college after intercession. I visited with the rabbi, and the rabbi said we can't do it, so we're going to have to break up.
No,
right, right. What's more likely, or often the case, right? If we don't do it, they're just going to intermarry.
How about the baby's coming?
We're going to lose the children.
No, the baby's coming.
Oh. That too. Yes, I understand. You mean less than 9 months from the wedding.
Right.
I understand. Yes, that too. Or, in certain times, what if they, Rabbi, this is going to have to be a religious wedding. So either you convert her,
or they'll get married at church,
or they'll convert me. Right? What if you have a case, more sincere in a certain sense? Couple didn't know any better. Married civilly. Now they're already married. And now, okay, if they're becoming, quote-unquote, Bali Tshuva, so that's its own complications, but that's a much better case. That's, quote-unquote, easy. I'm not discussing that. But let's say for whatever reason, then they really, we'd like to get Jewish. They have some, whatever. They're not ready to, bottom line is, they say, to come to the rabbi, and let's even they come to the Orthodox rabbi. We've been married 8 years, but now we've moved to a new community. We hear that there's a Jewish thing. We want our kids to go to the school. They don't take, whatever the reason. Will you convert my wife? Now, obviously, what's her motivation? Her motivation is because she's married to the Jewish husband. Isn't that a case of conversion for marriage? L'shem Ishus? Do we convert a person then? Well, if we don't, are you going to tell this man, in essence, listen, you're still never going to become frum because you're going to be... Okay, well, I gave that as a theoretical case. But let's say, to the point, I'm trying to give you an example. Let's say they're already married. So, like the Gemara was talking about, they want to convert to get married. Right? In many of the cases now, they're already married. Does that matter? Does them already be... So, these types of complications, again, the rabbis had their eyes open, and these types of shilas have been flooding in. Again, certainly you can trace, which I didn't, certain countries and certain... centuries or decades where the question spiked for obvious reasons because the world was changing.
Is there a difference between a Jewish male and a Jewish girl?
No.
Maybe, and
no.
Because they will never change it. The children will be.
We'll see. We'll see. But
why don't they go to you for conversion? Why don't they go to the conservative guy? They'll get a break.
So I want to mention to you, there's one, the first tshuva, which was not about conversion per se, but the earliest tshuva which is used as a basis for a more lenient approach, is actually a tshuva from the Rambam. The Rambam describes the following situation, which actually comes from the same Mishnah, which I didn't read, but was on the top of the first page. You have a couple, this is a true story, somebody asked the Shaila. They had a non-Jewish maidservant in the house. And there were rumors about the husband, the Jewish husband, and the maid. So they asked the Rambam, what should you do? Now there is a halacha mirabbanan called nitan, that if there are rumors about, typically the case would be a Jewish man, and the halacha could be even with another Jewish woman if she's married, meaning that he's having an illicit relationship, or in this case with a non-Jewish maidservant, the halacha is that really, mirabbanan, even if she would convert, or in the case of a married Jewish woman, let's say the couples get divorced, if there were rumors about the couples not doing the right thing before the divorce, mirabbanan, they're not allowed to get married. The divorce doesn't help. It's only not a daraisa anymore. But mirabbanan, there's a halacha called nitan, that once there was rumors that they were not doing the right thing when they shouldn't have been, we don't allow them to just, you know, get a piece of paper and make things kosher. Bottom line, though, is, well, if we don't let him do that, the rumors are going to probably persist for a good reason. So they ask the Rambam, what do we do? And the Rambam says, if you look at the bottom, he says, listen, it's true. First of all, they should just kick her out. You just fire her. That would be the best thing. But if you can't do that, says the Rambam, what do? You should free her, convert her, and if he loves her so much, let him marry her. The Rambam asks on himself, what do you mean let him marry her? Isn't that against this halacha called nitan? That if there's rumors about them messing around beforehand, they're not allowed to get married, even if she gets a conversion. Says the Rambam in the bottom line where I have it underlined, asinuzos, we're still going to do it, but make hakanas hashavim. Because in the big picture, it's the only way to, so to speak, lessen the averas for this man. Either he's going to be with a non-Jewish woman, or we're going to convert her, and hopefully they can make their way back. V'amarnu mutav shiyochal rotav v'lo shuman atzmo. A nice metaphor. Right? Better they should eat the gravy than the treif meat itself. In other words, you know, it's still a shmek, it's not exactly great. This wouldn't get a badatz mahadrin hashpacha of behavior, but it's certainly better, says the Rambam. Again, the Rambam, even though the case is slightly different than our cases, but it's needless to say a major building block, a principle, again, of this notion that in, at least in certain circumstances, as the Rambam, we can kind of look at the big picture, and if we can lessen the halachic problems, we may be interested in doing that. If you take a look at the next page, I've got to read this inside, we don't have time, but I gave you three tshuvas of Rav Uziel. The reason I give you three, Rav Uziel is one of the Sephardic chief rabbis from Israel. We mentioned him last week. We mentioned last week that he, in general, has a relatively liberal view, uniquely so. That he mentioned last week that he thinks, in many cases, you do not need Kabbalah Samitzvahs, and he writes in one place, even ideally, even Lechachila. We mentioned that last week, I don't want to review it now. But in those tshuvas, and he has many of them, he's often talking about cases of marriage. Again, why else are people who are not otherwise sincerely motivated, so why else are they converting? So most of the cases were conversion. And he has a number of tshuvas on the topic. I just gave you three of them. But if you take a look, even for example, at the first tshuva, halfway down, you see here who's his basis? HaRambam Zal B'tshuva. In every one of these, he's quoting the Rambam. I'm just giving you an example. The Rambam became the major building block. I think he may have run too far with the Rambam. But he took that Rambam and he ran. Oh, you see from the Rambam that if we can convert people even under less than ideal circumstances to lessen the averas, in fact, that's what he does, and that's what he says. And furthermore, in a number of these tshuvas, he says not only is it permissible to convert the person, because remember, we started this year saying, maybe they're a convert, but you're not supposed to do it. He says not only are you allowed to do it, it's a mitzvah to convert the person in this case. And actually, he writes, interesting, Jacob, he mentions more than once, not only is this true when the non-Jew is the woman, but even in the other case, in both cases, because the bottom line is, we don't want that any child why should they have only one Jewish parent? And if you'll tell me, let's say the couple has children and the wife isn't Jewish. So you'll say, what do we care about the kids for? They're not Jewish anyway. He says, that's terrible, on the contrary, because
part of, they have a little Jewish seed in them. Their father is Jewish. They're Zeri Yisrael, even though they're not Jewish, he says. And therefore, we care about them too. And therefore, he says, it's not only mutter, but a mitzvah. And in fact, if you take a look, again, I know I'm just paraphrasing all of this, but if you take a look at the bottom of the third tshuva, he says, anybody who doesn't do this, Yira Anochi, I fear, Shim Nidche Osam Lagamri, if we won't convert these people, Aideze Shalonakables Horeim Legerus, Nitva Ledin. Those rabbis will be called to judgment. He means, of course, in the court on high. Exactly. And he writes, Gedolehi Tochacha Zos, May Oso HaTochacha Shal Kabbalas Geirim. Accepting not imperfect converts is a problem. But not accepting families and losing them, assimilation, intermarriage, etc., when we could have converted them to save them, is a far bigger complaint against the rabbis. Now, I want to point out, so he is taking this Rambam and running, you know, just don't stop. He just keeps on going. I mentioned last week that the contemporary rabbi who most took up the banner of Rav Uziel was somebody named Rabbi Mark Angel, who was recently retired from the active rabbinate, who was for many, many years a prominent rabbi in Manhattan. And this article that I have for you is one of many that he's written on the topic. And he takes the banner of Uziel and runs with it. But I want to point out something, and again, if anyone will see Rabbi Angel, if he'll somehow hear this shiur, if I'm wrong, he can correct me. I'll be happy to find all of you and publicly apologize. But as far as I can tell, he makes an assumption in this piece, which is why I have it here for you on the bottom of page 3, which is not in any of the tshuvas of Rav Uziel. And all of the tshuvas of Rav Uziel, the couple's already married. So we're dealing already in a difficult situation. So he says we should make it better by doing this. You don't have to agree with him. I'm not sure. I do. But, okay, he said it. That's not Rabbi Angel, that's Rabbi Uziel. Take a look at what Rabbi Angel says here on the bottom. If we are faced with a de facto mixed marriage and we are permitted to convert the non-Jewish spouse and the children when applicable, if this is true when a couple is already married, it is obviously true before they have begun a forbidden marriage relationship. The conversion could offset future transgressions and religious difficulties. Now, I would consider that to be not obvious at all.
That's a stretch.
Rabbi Oberstein says it's a stretch. So in fact, if anybody gets in touch with Rabbi Angel, you'll send them to Rabbi Oberstein.
He's a pretty liberal guy anyway, Rabbi
Angel. Yeah. Anyway. So I just want to point out, I don't think Rabbi Uziel says it. What do you mean? You're the Machmir already. Are we ready? It's already been established. Nimnu Vagamru. Number two is, you could easily imagine, and I hope before the shir, at the end of the shir, to, if it's not already easy to anticipate, but I'll even show you some tshuvas which explicitly argue on this rationale. And again, if Rav Uziel had said it, I'm not saying there might be Rabbanim who would say it, but to say that Rav Uziel said it, as far as I know, he never did. The angel thinks it makes sense to apply before marriage. But what could you just easily say? Instead of running to convert them, run to break them up. If you allow, any time a couple comes to you and says, we want to intermarry, so will you convert us? You know, if we have an open door policy like that, you could easily see the other side. That cuts both ways. You're certainly not going to be increasing couples finding each other on J-date if you make it that easy for them.
This sound goes exactly like before.
Okay.
But they have to follow step rules.
Not according to an angel or...
Not
necessarily. Not necessarily.
He's using it as part of a civil marriage.
Well, obviously, there couldn't have been a chuppah of a condition, yeah. By definition.
So really, what's the difference between a civil marriage and just living together? I mean, that's putting a lot of...
Well, it certainly makes a difference. It does make a difference, especially you see some of the older tshuvas in Europe, where, again, I don't know, I have to talk to a historian to know the details, but a lot of the tshuvas describe a very difficult, if not impossible, divorce situation. I don't know, is that true? Were there countries in Europe where you couldn't get divorced, or at least it was very difficult to get divorced? Right, okay, good. I didn't need to go to a story, I just asked you.
In the state of Maryland, up until, say, 1930, the only ground for divorce was adultery.
Okay, so getting married was considered by the poskim as this couple cemented, they're not going anywhere, so we better help them. There are some poskim, though, who say even a permanent relationship, again, it's harder to judge without marriage, a civil marriage might be something. Now, again, Rav Uziel, with all due respect, you know, is certainly not what I would call mainstream, not even for Sephardim, and certainly not for Ashkenazim. However, there is a whole group of sources, which we will, again, I have them for you if you want to go through them yourself, but there's a number of them which are much more mainstream, which seem to accept, again, de facto, to be post facto, if the couple was already married, a basis of this, many of them based on the Rambam. For example, I'll just mention one of them to you. On the right-hand side is this book called Shalmei Shmuel. It was a Rav from Syracuse. I only know about this because one of the Rabbanim, who we all know and love, Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, recently celebrated the 20th, it was 20 years of being the Av Beis Din in Chicago. And among the things that they did in Chicago for him was they put together a sefer of a biography of him, as well as some write-up of halachic shurim that he gave, including some on conversion. And sure enough, he discusses a case of this rabbi in Syracuse who had one of these situations where a couple was married for years and they came and they said, "Can you convert my wife?" And he said, "Of course not. How could I convert it? You're insincere. You have no interest in religion. You're just converting for whatever." But then he says, "You know, he published his thoughts in a journal because he wasn't sure. He wanted to see maybe other great Rabbanim would come in." Sure enough, one of the greatest Rabbanim of the 20th century, V'chaskel Abramsky, wrote into the journal and said, "Absolutely, you can convert them." He says he assumes that you should at least make sure that she'll have some level of observance, just to commit at least to keep kosher and hopefully tar samishbacha. But the bottom line is, even though they're already married, and usually we don't convert people just for marriage, says Rav Chaskel Abramsky on the left-hand side there, quoting who again? No, then our good friend, the Rambam. Again, based on this seminal tshuva of the Rambam, you see it coming up again and again, affecting people, giving them a slightly more flexible approach. The truth of the matter is that a relatively, certainly not actually contemporary, but at least a relatively more recent example of this, which also finds its way into many other of the very contemporary tshuvas, is another tshuva written by one of the great, great European gedolim of the previous generation, Rav Shlomo Kluger. Rav Kluger was a prolific writer. You can't even tell you how many books he wrote. It's unbelievable. But one of his books was called The Shailos V'Tshuvos, Tuv Tam V'Das. And there he presents us with the following case. If you see on the right-hand side, I have the actual case. I'll paraphrase it, but if you want to look at it inside, he has the case. I'm not exactly sure which country in Europe this was, whether it was Russia or Lithuania, of somebody whose son got in the army. And we know usually when they got in the army, that was it for the Yiddishkeit. And now he comes home, he has a girlfriend. And he basically says, "Dad, I want to marry her. Let's go to the rabbi, will they convert her?" And just so you should, so the father say, "All right, that will be conversion. But P.S. Dad, just in case they don't convert her, not only am I going to marry her anyway, I'm going to convert. I'll convert." Maybe because her parents are going to make us. You know, we need that one set of in-laws. Either she leaves her family and joins ours.
There's no civil marriage.
Huh? Maybe there was. Right, probably, exactly. Right, there probably was no civil marriage, exactly.
What year is
I'm not exactly sure. I'm not exactly sure what year this comes from.
Did Bob Weinberg mention this? I think it's the Napoleonic Wars.
I don't know.
Kluger's after that.
Yeah, I don't know what year this particular tshuva comes from. I really don't know. But the bottom line is, he writes, "Listen, at the end of the day," he says, "clearly she's not converting because of the marriage. After all, from her perspective, she could get married to him without converting. He'll convert. So we can't say that she's converting just to get married, because, now, I'm not saying that's not debatable, but that's what he says. But the big point I want to bring out is on the left-hand column. Bottom line, he says, is, Imke nira de daito lehishtameid, he is intent on converting if we don't convert. So in this case, we're going to make sure that he can marry her in a Jewish way. Why? Take a look at the next column. Kevad al kalpanim chazinan mishvil shalo yete latarbus ra. Hisiru ha'isr tahare lechade osrlo. He says the bottom line is we're between a rock and a hard place. It's not ideal to convert him, obviously. But if we don't, what's going to happen? We're going to lose him and his children, unborn children, but we're going to lose him. So for the sake, again, he didn't use this term, but I'll coin it, for the sake of Kirov, so we shouldn't lose him completely, Seder von Kugel, we're allowed to convert her. And this theme is repeated in a number of tshuvas. Now, this is the case before they were married. But many poskim are not willing to be lenient before a couple was married, but especially if they're already civilly married. So, well, you can tell them to divorce her. You can tell them, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. And other than that, what are we left with? We're left with intermarriage, which aside from the assimilation factor, it's a horrible, horrible Aveira. Better to do the, quote, smaller Aveira of this less than ideal conversion and save him from that. Now, I just want to point out one more thing before we try to move towards a transition and a conclusion. Many of the tshuvas here, again, for those who are interested and capable, you're certainly invited to look at them on your own. But I want to point out one interesting thing, which is I put here on the bottom of page 4. Bottom of page 4 is the tshuvas Melamed Lahoil. Who knows who that was? David Zvi Hoffman, one of the architects of German Orthodoxy, a great, great Talmud Chacham. And he makes the following point. He accepts this. He does accept this premise. But he, in essence, is asking, you know, bothered by it. And he makes a very interesting point, which I have not seen in other poskim before or since. But I think implicitly he must have hit the nail on the head, which makes us a little bit more palatable. He says, if you turn to the next page, page 5. In the third line after the period, Yesh Lomar, the Davke Makablin Hager Mishum Takana Didei Srika Lomarlo O Takaba Kalatar Kula O Tishar Nahri. If the reason we're doing the conversion is for the, quote, benefit of the convert, him or herself, they want to convert, they want to get married, so then we say, if we're doing it for your benefit, at least in the theoretical sense, you're only doing that if you're sincere, only if you're going to accept the Torah. And if you're not, get back. We don't need you. However, he said, im, at the end of the line, the period, anu megayrin osa mishum takanta di Yisrael, v'adai mutav shetitgayer v'lo yifsad zeri Yisrael. In all of these types of cases, a subtle shift has occurred. I didn't articulate it before. Maybe some of you realize it on your own. But he articulates it. What's the pressure to make the conversion? For the convert, him or herself? No. The pressure is for the Jewish spouse. So when are we allowed to take these other considerations into account? Not for the sake of the convert, who at this point hasn't converted yet, and therefore their issues are not ours. But when we're worried not just about, hey, what are the problems, what's going to be with this person's life, and what problems will this person cause us or not cause us, a good conversion, a bad conversion, you could argue, is it better they should go to Reform, better they should go to Orthodox? That's all fine and good when we're talking about what's better for that convert. But when we're worried that, uh-oh, if we don't do this, not what's going to be with the convert, what's going to be with the Jewish spouse, again, whether it's because he's just going to live with her as an intermarried couple, or because he's going to convert and leave Judaism altogether, or because they're going to lose the children, as he puts it, La'abe Zeri Yisrael. So then we're, again, the Gemara was talking about a much simpler world, so to speak, where the only question was the motivation of the convert. Oh, so then there's very little wiggle room. But when we have this new factor, which is not the convert, him or herself, but the spouse, again, as we'll see in a few seconds, it's not everyone who's willing to accept what we've been saying, but this is certainly a bona fide tradition. The Rambam as being one of the poles, this tshuva of Rosh Shlomo Kluger, and again, I don't have time to go through them with you, but if you look at many of the other tshuvas, from some of the biggest heavyweights, the Malav and the Hoyl, the Achiezer of Chaim Ozer Grudzinski is this next critical, critical tshuva, that's why I gave so much of it to you here on bottom of page 5. Very seminal tshuva, significant tshuva. All of them were willing on some level to accept this. Again, it's all, I think Rav Nam and the Hoyl hit it on the head. Because we're not focusing on the convert anymore. We're discussing the convert, but we're focusing on the Jewish spouse. And that, at least for this group of poskim, makes all the difference. Now, again, this is far from ideal. None of this discussion. In a certain sense, yes. Oh, but hold that off. Jacob, hold that thought. This is far, we're going to get to that, exactly. It's far from ideal, even people are willing to accept it. Sometimes you have to take a bitter pill to get better. So some people, just to give you an example, Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, again, the Gadol HaDor in pre-war Lithuania, Page 5 is a tshuva written. What's the date here? Tafresh Ayin Beis. How many years ago that is? That is, what, 80 years ago. No, I'm sorry. What am I saying? 90 years ago. 90 years ago. Something, yes. So he has a tshuva there where, again, to make a long story short, he quotes the Rambam, he quotes the Rosh Shlomo Kluger, and he's willing to be lenient. Turn the page to the top of page 6. Tafresh Sadi Dalit, 22 years later, the same author, 22 years later, he changed his mind. Another shayla was brought to him, it seems like virtually identical circumstances, except if she's not sincere, she's not going to keep the mitzvahs, no conversion. There's a lot of tension here. There's a lot of tension here. The bottom two sources, you have Rav Dovid Yafman again, and another one of the great Ashkenaz, even more recent vintage, the Sridi H, was the Rav Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg, survivor, moved after the war, moved to Montreux in Switzerland. He has a tshuva here also, where he is already a little bit trying to close the loophole. He says, listen, we're willing to do it, but only if, even though we're being a certain sense blackmail, but only if she promises to keep the basics, kashrus, Shabbos, ta'as ha-mashpacha. He goes so far as to say she should sign something. Whether they'll keep it or not, how relievable it is, I don't know the case. It's hard to know. But the point is, even though he's willing to accept it, where some of the other tshuvas are willing to accept it, even almost throwing up their hands with what the observance is going to be, you have some who are trying to have their cake and eat it too. We would never even have gotten into this if we weren't motivated by these other circumstances. But even now that we're motivated, only if they'll at least make some commitment. And Taras HaMashpacha is a very significant one, because the halachic punishment, the Aveira, of having a relationship when you don't keep the chasnida is on a technical level as severe or more severe as with a non-Jewish mate. And certainly, as one of the posts can point out, for the non-Jew, who are we doing a favor to? If they weren't Jewish, so they have a nice life, their Jewish spouse, they're going to have problems. But this, we care about the non-Jew as a person. What do we convert him or her, but they don't keep the mitzvahs, especially not Hilchos Nida, and now they're chai of all these capital crimes. We're doing them a favor? Not simple. Furthermore, and with this we'll try to move to the last section of the shiur, another 5-10 minutes.
That's a very good argument. How do people like Shlomo Kluger and all the others, how do they ignore that, the fact that you're taking someone and bringing them into...
I don't know. I don't remember if they explicitly... not all of them, for sure. I still don't think that they all addressed it. But I would guess... I'm not sure if I saw this in one of the Jews, or I'm speculating. But it could be very easily told to them. Which we do in general. As you go back to the original Gemara, somebody converts. Somebody comes to us for conversion. One of the things we tell them is, listen, you can go to Olam Haba the easy way. You're looking for a hard way.
It's not a question of time. The assumption behind all of that is that the person is not sincere. You wouldn't have a shot. You wouldn't have a tshuva if you assumed that they were not immediately after the conversion going to be over on a whole slew of things.
Because then it'd be obvious.
If you have that assumption, there'd be no reason for the
tshuva
at all.
But the bottom line is, even though it's going to be, in the end of the day, bad for their scorecard, so to speak,
right,
we'll see. That is a very relevant factor next week for the conversion of minors, for children. But an adult is allowed to make their own decisions. Whereas when we are converting the minor, when the community and the Bez Din has a much more central role to play with the conversion of minors, that's going to be the main that's the topic next week, with adoption, etc. Or not even adoption, let's have couples converting themselves and they have little children. It could be either one of those cases. But
there's no earlier source in the Rambam for this doing a favor for the Jewish spouse.
Not on this specific type of case, as far as I know. The idea that we sometimes in halacha will do things less than ideally to help people. I'm not talking about conversion. Just that does have earlier antecedents. But the application, in this case, as far as I know, which is why everyone quotes it, is the Rambam. It was revolutionary. Now, I just want to point out two things. Number one is, until now, a big premise, I don't know if I articulated this before, I should have, a big premise of many of these lenient sources that we've seen, somewhat technical in light of the points we just mentioned, but relevant, is the following. The Gemara we started with says, Geirus l'shem ishus, you shouldn't do. You shouldn't convert someone who wants to convert to get married. But many of these posts can assume, I didn't point it out to you because I wasn't doing a lot of these sources inside, but many of the sources said it. Don't take my word for it, look at them yourself. That if you have a couple that's already married civilly, we do not consider that converting to get married. Even though they may come to us and tell us, please convert my spouse and then do a chuppah for us. But they're not converting to get married. They're already married. And if we don't convert them, They'll stay married. So we don't look at... So whether you go so far as to say, therefore, they're as sincere as Rus, you know, and they're the paradigm, you know, they are, you know, Hillel Shammai and Rabbi Akiva wrapped up into one. But many poskim do use a language, either more minimalistically, that at the very least you can't say they're motivated for marriage because they're already married. And some even go so far as to say, by definition, they must be sincere. They must, because why else are they converting? That is, again, that I'm not saying it's not debatable. We'll see the debate now. But that is a premise of most of these group of poskim who I find these leniency. Again, no one's thrilled about this. Everyone's, you know, so to speak, coughing as they swallow this. But given all the other pressures with the Jewish spouse, et cetera, another point is, after all, you can't even say she's insincere just getting married in the Gemara's terms for marriage when she's already married anyway.
Does this raise the question of insincere? Does this raise the question of sincere for what? You have a question of sincere being a Kabbal mitzvos, and you have a question of being sincere wanting to join the Jewish people, and those are separate issues.
Yeah. It does raise the question. It's very complicated. It's very amorphous.
Because you can say the one, yes, there
is. Yes.
Sincerely wish to join the Jewish
right.
people, but not sincerely wish to be Shomer Shabbos.
Right, that's right. So I want to just point out, and to close, that just to make it more complicated, that I think I've quoted before, I have a Rebbe who used to say often, I'm not making it complicated. It is complicated. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible, but this is not an easy topic. If anyone thought they were going to walk out of the shir tonight with, you know, the 10-second soundbite, you're not going to get it. I'm sorry. The other school of thought, so to speak, which is far more hesitant with these types of ideas, is based on some basic counter-arguments. One of the ones who made this argument very significantly was Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. Again, it's not surprising that I keep on repeating, not exclusively, but I've repeated the name of a lot of the great German Gedolim. They were assimilating, obviously, an earlier and faster clip in Western Europe. So Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, again, one of the great German Gedolim, he did not buy any of this. He said, first of all, just because they're civilly married, but they want to now get married with like a Jew, they want to get married like a chuppah of a kiddushin, that still does count as the Gemara's case, l'shem ishus. We don't care that they're civilly married now. They want to get married religiously, number one. But number two is more powerful argument, which I want to focus on, because it gets picked up, and it's, to this day, I think, very relevant. Is he says, if we'll, even in certain cases, he says, if a couple was already just coming to us after the fact, maybe, still not into it, maybe. He says, but if this was a case where the non-Jew came to us first to convert, and we saw they weren't sincere, weren't going to be religious, so we said no. So anyway, they got married, and now they want a heksher. Right? How does the saying go? Better to say I'm sorry than to ask please. Easier to say I'm sorry than please.
Easier to get
forgiveness than permission. So if that's the case, says the Binyan Sion, says Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, somebody comes to us, we already turned them down. So they said, the heck with the rabbis, I'll get converted, I'll get married, and now I'll show up to the rabbi, oh, you better convert us, or else this Jewish guy, he's married to me already. That's real blackmail, Jacob. Says the Binyan Sion, take a look. Excuse me, I'm sorry. So that is the Binyan Sion. He says, this is insincere, we don't want to do it. But if you take a look, I'm sorry. Again, one of the main people here, the Malamed Lahoil. I'm still on page 7. He says, in such a case, I'm sorry, the Malamed Lahoil, page 7, again, earlier, but also from the German tradition, Im Loke, he says, if you are willing to convert someone who we already knew was insincere, but now they got married against our wishes anyway, Kol HaNachrio, Shein Rotzen LeKablin, any non-Jewish woman, who we didn't want to convert, who wasn't sincere, what will they do? They'll just ignore us. Yelchu V'yisna'u, who knows how to pronounce that?
Sevilla,
very good. Civil marriage. Civil authorities, but Sevilla. V'yomru sh'achakach, and afterwards they'll go to the rabbis. Balkarchu yanu amen. And the rabbis will be forced to give a stamp of approval to answer amen to what the civilian authorities did. Gambaloza, furthermore, he said, Im Yisrabu ha-mechsholim shebnei Yisrael yisu nachris, yehekrech lasos geder shlo lekabel gioris kelu. Because if we want to stem the tide of intermarriage, we can't make it so easy to just be able to take it to an intermarriage version of a car wash. You just go right in, you come out, you go in dirty, you come out clean. We can't, how are we going to stem the tide if we make it so easy to just go right around? And this, I think, is the ultimate kind of yin and the yang that's being going on here. The whole premise, with all of the extra longus bolstering the case, at the end of the day, all of those lenient tshuvas are basically based on the same rationale of the Rambam and Fulma Kluger, which is, in a certain sense, I'll call it kiruv. At the end of the day, that's where they're bolstering the arguments, it's this, it's that, but that's the real motivation, or else why do we have to get involved in something so less than ideal? The counter argument is, yes, we care about kiruv, but who's kiruv? What kiruv? At what price? We're going to have a much bigger problem. And in fact, I saw one of the great, I believe it was Czechoslovakian or Hungarian, one of the Shailas and Shuvas for him, who makes this point succinctly, but I believe very much to the point, is the Maharshag. Shuvas Maharshag on the bottom of page 7. And I just want to read you three lines, which are, again, my copy was bad, so the Xerox copy was certainly bad. So I apologize for that, but I'm going to try to make out the words for you. Someone wrote him with a whole little rationale, a whole Shulchan Torah, why you should be lenient and convert this case, because if not, they're going to be intermarried and we're going to lose the kids, everything we've been seeing until now. He writes there where I have it underlined, in the middle. B'muskol rishon eini mechuvra esli psakseh. Because at first glance, it seems to me you're mistaken. Kafilu imneima, even if we'll say shalagabi habal, for the Jewish spouse, tihadabar tikun im tiskayer, even if for the Jewish spouse you'll say, yes, you're doing a good thing, now he's not married to a non-Jew, it'll be good for him, he gets to marry a Jew. Aval havi kilkul laha'olam. A tikun for this one person, you're going to create a churban, a kilkul for the rest of the world, because you've lowered the bar that you don't even have to jump, you can walk right over it. In essence, to intermarry. Sh'al yedei ze yisrabu yoser me bale Sevilla, very good. Sh'yasho belivo sh'achar kach yifol etzlash et disgayer. Simple. We'll go get married in the church or with the justice of the peace. Then we'll say to the rabbi, oh, you got to convert me, it's too late. What are we doing? Yes, in this one case, each individual case, we're helping the people. But in the scheme of things, we're creating a disaster. Now, these are very complicated questions, very weighty issues, and you can see great people really fighting over this. I just want to conclude with to show you how these issues, especially this argument, is timeless and timely. If you look at the bottom of the page 8, a conclusion from Rabbi Schachter's piece, where he makes, again, it's an astounding statement in isolation, but again, we now know where it comes from at least. He writes here, the bottom, I have it under the bottom. As violently as we disapprove of mixed marriage, 1965 no less, it is still the lesser evil than a spurious conversion, which has no significance in Jewish law and only spells deception and self-delusion. Now, break the plates to make such a statement. We don't want a couple to be intermarried, but better that than the confusion of a bad conversion. And I remember a case in Cincinnati. A couple very, very prominent in the establishment Federation Jewish community for generations had a child who went to Penn. I think junior year abroad, went to Israel, and Nebuch got from Baal Tshuva. In years, was learning in yeshiva and was ready to get married. And the Rebbe or the Masada Kedushin made an investigation. Turns out, I think three generations, either the grandmother or maybe even the great-grandmother on his mother's side, had a reform conversion. He's not even Jewish. Now, the PS is, he was willing, it was fixable because he was willing to be fixed. His family was furious. And who are they furious at? The bad Orthodox. You're going to tell me I'm not Jewish? I'm the president of the Plum Street Temple. I have been, and they were, this is sincere, they were good people. They were Jewish in a sense, and certainly in spirit, through and through, they were dedicated. But who were they upset at? Not the rabbi four generations or two generations ago who told them they were Jewish when he shouldn't have. Upset at the rabbi now. But the confusion, the problems that occur from these types of conversions, it's nice because he was willing to convert. What if he wasn't willing? Amazing, right? Just, it's not a simple situation. I just want to conclude with the following. I mentioned last week that there was a recent organization and convention and conference in Washington, which was, even though it was promoting in their literature, strict and higher standards, was very controversial and in fact was condemned by the Haredi Beis Din in Yerushalayim. I have a quote, a copy, not a quote, the piece of, you know, one of those famous things hanging on the wall? You don't have to go to Meir Sharam, I brought it to you. Wow. Meir Sharam comes to Pikesville. A copy of their condemnation. What were they condemning the organization for? I'll just explain to you in a nutshell. Because this organization was proselytizing, which we generally don't do anyway, proselytizing to intermarried couples. Not like in all of the cases we've seen, which is still a machlokas and debatable, where the couple came to us. And then, even though they're not going to be so from, but they were going to them in one manner or another, and certainly almost no, if no, attempt to make anyone from or anything. Now, their argument was intermarriage and assimilation. And it's interesting and not surprising in light of everything we've seen, that in essence, leave aside the haranguing factor, the essential condemnation was exactly the point that we just saw from Rav David Tzvi Hoffman and from the Marshak, which is you say you're helping things. On the contrary, you're going to. It's the ultimate invitation to intermarriage. Not only is no problem to intermarry, we'll go and run after you to give your spouse a quickie symbolic conversion. What did they lose by intermarrying? Nothing. There's no price to pay. And that is, in essence, the part that I underlined here in the middle. This is exactly, they said, the problem. You're going to create more problems than you think you're going to solve.
Do you think that this concord is happening?
I hope so.
I mean, they got a lot of people.
That was before this.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, that was before this. This was after the conference.
Let me ask you a historic question.
I take one or two questions, and then I want to let you go to enjoy the food. But I'm happy to stay in the schmooze even after.
In the Midbar, were they converted or they were?
I don't know. I don't know.
There's no.
I don't know. I didn't say there's no. I said I don't know. KNOW. I'm not sure. There's that conversion before Matan Torah was very not simple anyway. So certainly the Erev Rav is not simple. The bottom line, though, is Chazal say... Yes, correct. But the bottom line is that 4/5 of the Jewish people didn't even go out. So those who went out were sincere, hopefully, and committed. Yes?
It's a related question, but you know people that are mean to try and get the Jewish spouse away from...
Right.
And they do successful kids. But when it comes to... That's the case where the man is Jewish and the woman is good. When it's the opposite...
I don't know at all that the facts you're saying are true. I'm not involved, so I'm not familiar. But if a rabbi would make such a call, I'm not saying I would, and I certainly haven't. I haven't been involved in a case like that. I assume the reason is the children, because in this case they'll be Jewish anyway. There is. That's why I'm not saying I agree with it or understand it. You're assuming facts which I'm not familiar with. I'm not involved with. I'm not involved. I'm not sure. I can't speak about what I don't know. Yes?
Now, I have a cousin that was converted conservative.
Okay.
Right. His father is Jewish, or was Jewish. His mother, of course, was not Jewish. So he converted.
Okay.
He was told by that rabbi, because he was his father was a Kohen, that his children could be Kohen.
Great. Can I become a Kohen too?
Okay.
You have to pay.
Okay. I mean, I thought it was a stretch.
Okay. Thank you very much. Please help the faders get rid of the food.